Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah! Will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 159, Huzzah 2016. So thank you for all of you who are tuning in to this episode. We are recording this live at Huzzah 2016 at the Doubletree Inn at South Portland, Maine. Before I go any further, I want to make sure everyone knows that we got a link to the show notes, so in case you're on the commute, you're painting, you're whatever, you're not going to be able to remember all the stuff that we talked about. There's going to be a lot of games that we discuss, and we're going to go into a lot of things. So I'll have links to all that in the show notes. Just remember this one thing, okay? WargamingRecon.com/WR159. WargamingRecon.com/WR159. That'll bring you to the show notes, and you will get all of that. So I want to let all of you know, we've got a very special guest here today. He joined me last year at Huzzah. It's become kind of a little bit of a cool tradition here. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
Doing good, John. Thanks.
I gotta say, you look a little sleepy.
It's been a long weekend.
Tell me about it. I know we're gonna like start on Friday and work our way forward, but I was in a game last night that I think I didn't get back to the room until like 11:30. Is it in bed by midnight or so? And then, of course, my wife and daughter are here with me. And the baby's like, 6 o'clock is a great time to wake up. Hey, let me wake everyone else up. And the same thing yesterday, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. My wife says, time to wake up. And I look at him like, everyone's just so fuzzy. I can't see. I'm too sleepy. 10 more minutes, right, Mom? Yeah. So Friday, we played some games. Or we each played one game, I think, right? We played in the same game.
We did, yeah. It was the Gates of Prague.
Yeah, so Chris Parker, who's of Day of Battle Games, and he's a friend of the show and a Patreon backer, he actually GM'd that. And it's interesting because when that was first put into the event listing, he was going to use his own rule set that he was working on called Snappy Freddy for it. And as it progressed, I think he kind of played Maurice a little bit and realized that he thought that might play better than working on his own rules. And as someone who's never created their own rules, I'm only going to guess at the pain in the butt to do all that sort of stuff. So I don't blame him for wanting to do the switch.
Yeah, not at all. And if it's not, you know, if he's still in development or whatever, it might not be the kind of thing he would want to like play test at a con. I don't really know. I'm glad he chose Maurice because I was interested to see how Maurice would work as a multiplayer game. I've played it a couple of times, you know, head to head. And it's a good rule set. It's fun, but it doesn't seem like a set that would work very well as multiplayer, but it did. The way he had the forces divided up, it was basically, you know, just having each wing act basically as its own game. So the command activations weren't tied together.
I was kind of curious about it as well, because I had played Maurice, well, I say play, but I was taught Maurice once many, many, many moons ago. Adam of the Fencing Frog blog, I had blogspot.com, came over to my place, and Adam's a mutual friend of ours, and he was like, how about we play Maurice? And I was like, okay, it has cards. And I was like, okay. And I'm usually open to most new things, as long as they're not something really intricate, hex-based counter games, which turn me off.
Yeah, they're very scary.
They are very, very scary to someone like me. You know, the less I gotta look up, the less math is not my thing, right? So you don't want me to have to be like, add this modifier and minus that and do, no. I need something to already have that done for me, and the fewer charts I need to look at, the better. And I was like, okay, I'll try this because things just do. And so he taught me how to play, and I mean, I got owned, but like, I just kind of had a hard time that one time kind of thinking about like what I needed to do. A totally different style of play for me. So I was interested to try it again with this, but I was worried like you, because when Adam had taught me how to play, he made a point of saying it's not a multiplayer game, that it's really intended for campaign sort of settings. So I wondered what Chris Parker was going to do with it here. And I know you and I had talked beforehand, and you said the same thing. You were interested to see what he would do with it for multiplayer.
Yeah.
I had a really good time playing the game. I don't think it was a good multiplayer game though, because my main concern was, like you said, it was two separate games that were being played side by side.
Yeah.
And they really didn't have anything to do with one another. I like if it's multiplayer, not in the sense of like, say, me playing against you, but like this four of us, the six, eight, or whatever, that you can do stuff that will impact the whole table. It impacts the whole thing. Whereas we were all playing on one table, to me, that's one game. And so like I commanded the cavalry for the Austrians. And as anyone who's games with me knows, that's probably not the thing I should be commanding because I play very defensively. And not to ruin it for anyone, but I got my ass kicked twice. I died, and then we reset up with the rest of the stuff, and I died again, which I had a blast playing. But it was focused just on that one side, even though the table was open up that if I wanted, I could have given commands to kind of come over to the left flank with you where you had your artillery and your infantry to maybe kind of support. And I know that's not how warfare was done at that time period, but that's not my playing style either. So if you wanted to separate it out, I think maybe it would have been better to have some sort of overall narrative, but have separate tables where it's one-off and one-off, and then have the results of those games then go into a final outcome for the whole event.
Yeah, I mean, the way that could have worked, though, is like after the first time you got wiped out, the thing to do would have been to just the other kid we were playing with, I can't remember his name, but if you guys hadn't reset up and gone at it again, obviously then his cavalry would have been roaming on the flank of the Austrian army, free to do whatever they wanted to do, because our cavalry was all gone at that time, and really he could have turned the whole flank and rolled the Austrians up, and it would have been a pretty different outcome from what it was. We ended up actually beating the Prussians, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying. The way it was set up, it was sort of like two different, completely different games. But Maurice is funny because with all those figures on the board, if that was just a two-person game, most of those figures probably wouldn't have moved out of their starting position because of the way the command and control works in Maurice with the cards and the activations and everything. You just can't do everything with everybody. So I haven't played the game a lot. That's probably, the fourth or fifth time I've played it.
Mm-hmm.
The way that those games typically work out is just the action will start either on one flank or maybe in the center, and that's where it stays. Maybe a couple of units that aren't in that area will move and get to do stuff, but because of the limited amount of control you have over the troops, which is fine. I mean, for the period that Maurice covers, 7 Years' War up through American Revolution, I forget what Sam Mustafa gives us the day range, but basically late 1600s through the American Revolution. That's fine because command and control they weren't very flexible tactically. But for a multiplayer game, that just wouldn't work. Like if you just had one command structure, one deck of command cards you could use for your activations and everything, somebody's going to spend the entire game doing nothing. So yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but if we're going to use Maurice as a multiplayer game, that's the only way to do it.
Well, you raise a great point though, because no one likes a game where you're sitting there and you don't do anything. I think it's different if you're just getting together with some friends, but if you're going to a game day, you're going to a convention, you don't want to be paying to drive there, to stay at the place, to then pay to get into the convention or whatever, and then you spend the whole time sitting there twiddling your thumbs, or you're on your smartphone, you're like, what's going on social media? I'm going to do this, play my game, or Angry Birds looks really interesting right now. That's not what you came for. You came to hang out with people and to play games. You don't want to just sit there. So I think you're right. By doing what Chris did with Maurice, it made it so that there was always something for us to do. And I like that first turn, maybe the first two turns, for me, it was a little difficult just trying to figure out, like, this is how the turn works, and then how do I want to use the cards? But after that, just kind of picked up, and we just kind of ran with it. And it was the first time for my opponent and I basically to play. I mean, and I know I was taught before, but it's been so long.
Yeah.
It was basically my first time again. And we just did it on our own. We had a little bit of help from Chris's brother, who's kind of like co-GMing, which was nice. And he just kind of guided us if we had a question. But we did the game ourselves, and that's something I know you and I have both liked about Black Powder, where the learning curve is very shallow. Dive in, you spend a turn, maybe two turns, kind of just figuring out what you need to do and how the mechanics work. And after that, you don't even need a GM, basically, because you can just go and you do it.
Yeah.
So that was I'm really glad Chris picked Maurice. And like I said, leading up to it, I thought it was I was a little disappointed because I wanted to play his game. The rules that he was doing, but then when he made the change, I was really curious, like you, about that multiplayer mechanic. And despite my concerns with it, I actually do think it was a really wise move, and I think it worked out really well here.
Yeah.
It was just I think maybe because it's different from what I'm used to for a so-called multiplayer game. Like when we've run games at events, of course we haven't used Maurice, we've used a different type set of rules, but if we have six people playing, we have eight people playing, everything, everyone does it, impacts something on the table, and you can do that if you want. And of course those games, like you can move more, you can do all sorts of stuff. It's a different era of fighting and everything too.
Right.
So that was our Friday night of gaming. And then was it Friday that we did the raffles? Was that Saturday that we did raffles?
So I only did one of the raffles, but it was Saturday afternoon one, I think.
Okay. So then, you weren't able to stay at the hotel because you kind of got held up with booking your room.
Yeah, well, with work and everything, I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to come. So I had to wait till the last minute to book. So I ended up at the Days Inn down the road.
Hey, how did you like it down there?
I didn't particularly care for
it. It's no Doubletree, I'm sure.
No.
But I heard you were trying to find a container for a beverage that you wanted to drink, and all they had was paper cups, and that was problematic.
Well, I guess I shouldn't be so picky, but yeah, I brought along a really nice bottle of bourbon, and I don't want to sip it necessarily out of a paper cup like a homeless alcoholic. But that was either that or sipping it straight out of the bottle was basically the only options I had, because I only had paper cups in the room. I was finally able to track down an actual glass, so it ended up being okay. But yeah, just that kind of thing. I mean, it's not the end of the world, and it's definitely cheaper than the Double Day, but it's not nearly as nice. And it's kind of a bummer not actually being on site, because it's a little inconvenient. You know, if you have an hour or so between games and you want to go back to the room and like look at all the cool stuff you just bought or just laid out or whatever, it's a pain. But it's my own fault because I waited so long to register. So.
Well, you kind of had to wait. I mean, with the work situation and stuff, it's not like you were like, oh, I don't know, and you were waffling or whatever. Or you knew you wanted to come if you were able to. You just didn't. I'm glad you were able to make it, even though you were, you know, down the street.
Yeah, I was too, because I really wasn't sure. But I mean, you know, it's nice enough. It's not like it's a rat trap or anything like that. It doesn't help that they're in the midst of some construction now. So it's like walking in through the entryways and down the halls. It's a little bit like walking through an industrial zone, but that's obviously going to be a temporary thing. They got to put all that stuff somewhere while they're in the midst of remodeling.
Well, that's true. I mean, when we went to TotalCon and I stayed at the hotel there, the Holiday Inn is normally for Holiday Inn. It's actually pretty nice, but they were doing renovation and it was just like a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying about the bourbon. You probably don't want to put in a paper cup. I don't mind. So I went to paper cup and I probably would have just been like, whatever. I'll do.
It just makes me feel like an alcoholic. Maybe I am an alcoholic, but I don't want to feel like one.
Well, I'm not one to pass judgment. If you are one, you're only one if you admit that you are. And okay. That's the first step you need to take on the road to recovery, to admitting you have the problem. Otherwise, I think it just means you enjoy a good beverage every so often, or very frequently, yes, the case. Maybe I'm not saying you do.
Right, I understand.
But some people do, and I don't know. Again, I'm not one to pass judgment because I have my own issues, I'm sure. So then you were down the street, and I gotta say, I love being able to stay at the hotel where an event is. And of course, coming up like to Maine, since we don't live in the area, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference, just that, like, you gotta stay somewhere.
Yeah.
But when there's, events closer to us, like, TotalCon again, just for an example, I don't need to stay at the hotel because, I mean, live close enough that I can get back and forward to it. If I really wanted to do that, I wouldn't, but if I wanted to, I could drive back and forth and whatever, it would be okay. But you're right, there's something about being able to be there at the event so that you can go, you can do the stuff, you can bring stuff back to your room. Or in, like here at Huzzah, it's kid friendly to a degree, but really it's for grownups. It's for, I don't want to say it's for men because that's kind of sexist, but you look out in the main ballroom and it's like 98% men. Not that we don't want women or people who identify as women coming in and gaming. I think we would all welcome it as long as they're interested in it and want to give it a go. It's just, it's the demographic. It tends to be a male hobby.
Well, it is. Yeah. I mean, historical wargaming is for whatever reason, it appeals to guys, and for the most part, older guys.
Yeah, it's certain demographics, certain age, yeah. I'd say certain financial situation.
Yeah, so it would be nice if there were more people, particularly a lot more younger people that were interested in it. But there actually kind of are. There were a surprising number. It seems like every time I come up here, there are more younger people who are getting involved with it, so that's a good thing.
I think maybe it's like dads or uncles or whoever the kids see that they're playing it. They're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah. Can I come with you? Can we go check out? And I don't know if they're repeat customers, if they end up globbing onto it as a hobby or whatever, yeah, or if they just kind of
are. It's like everybody we can convert to chain of command. Somebody can get off with a drug of 40K.
Well, there you go. I think that's great. And since this is, you know, geared towards a more mature level of individual.
Let's just say order.
But like, they have like a bar here. So if you want to have an alcoholic beverage, you're not calling anyone an alcoholic. But if you want, you can get yourself a gin and tonic. You can get yourself a bourbon. You can have whatever you want. And if you're staying here, you don't have to worry about dealing like, how am I going to get home? How am I going to get to the other hotel? It's all safe. So you don't have to worry about, am I going to endanger anyone else? Am I going to endanger myself? You stumble into the elevator, you go up and hope you get your room key working right, and you fall into bed and just don't puke on anything or anyone is what it is. And then you're fine and you come down the next morning and you can do it again if you want it, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of nice. You can also just kind of stay a little later. I don't stay up as late as I used to anymore, but it's nice. Like, you could, after a game, you can go hang out with some of the people at the bar or the restaurant or whatever, just kind of relax, and then you don't have to worry about being too tired to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So I think those are good positives if you're able to stay at the events venue.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, it sells out fast. I know they didn't sell out the hotel. They only had a certain number of rooms, but they sold out the block of rooms or the con pretty quickly, actually.
Yeah, when they announced that room block, the room block goes almost as soon as they have it announced. I think there were a couple of additional events at the hotel here this weekend, smaller ones, but I'm sure there was, you know, obviously they took up rooms too, so.
Well, I was surprised. There was one, and I can't remember the name of the room, but there's off of the main ballroom, you go down the hall a little bit towards the restaurant, there's a room on the left that kind of connects in to a couple others, and there's one of those like self-help, like empower yourself sort of things.
Yeah.
And they were there on Friday, they were there on Saturday, and there was a bunch of women, and I don't know if they were standing or if it was just standing there going, but they took up like tons of parking spots. Yeah. So when we kept on trying to find parking spots, so thankfully we timed it when like they would leave, and so we got something that was somewhat decent. But the parking goes fast, and the lot's not as big as it seems.
No, it's not. It's the only kind of.
Well, and they share it too, because it's kind of shared. There's a Starbucks and a mattress store next door, and then on the other side, sort of, but not really, kind of shared with Cracker Barrel a little bit. Mm. So the spots do go fast. Well, anyway, so we played at the Gates of Prague on Friday, and then Saturday, you had some games that you were playing. I didn't play in as much. I split my time since I come with my wife and the daughter. So Saturday was basically our day to go and do stuff. But you started the day off with the game, I think.
I did. It was with Chris Parker again, actually. This time it was using one of his rule sets, one of the Day Battle rule sets called Light Bobs. It was Battle of the Snowshoes is what it was called on the table.
French and Indian War?
No, it was Red War.
Oh, cool.
No, I take that back. It was French and Indian War. But anyway, it was a skirmish between, I call it a skirmish. Light Bobs isn't really a skirmish rule set, but it's smaller scale. It's more on the battalion scale. Whereas, a lot of your Revolutionary War rule sets tend to focus on larger scale battles.
Mm-hmm.
The units that you field in Light Bobs tend to be like company sized units, like maybe 50 to 100 guys are represented by a unit. And the figures, oddly, for a game that's not a skirmish game, he recommends that the figures be mounted individually. Any unit will be anywhere from I forget, but the units we had on the table were anywhere from 4 to 8 figures, and I think they might possibly go up to as many as 12 figures in a unit. But in any case, each individual unit is a single company.
Why do you think, when you played, was there a benefit or a reason behind being based individually? Because that does seem odd for something like this.
Not really, because it wasn't a factor in the game that we played because of this sort of skirmish nature of both the Indian troops and the Rangers that were on the British side and the light infantry. They were all basically open order type troops. It's easier to represent open order, I guess. If you had figures based like the way we base our guys for Black Powder, for example, with 4 28mm figures on a base,
mm-hmm.
that would work fine, I think. It's a little less flexible when you're looking at it in a smaller scale and you want to be able to sort of arrange the guys like within a terrain feature or whatever, because the Black Powder basing or any of those kinds of basing systems are kind of designed for, you know, the typical long lines of entry.
Well, I mean,
facing off against each other, but you could make it work.
We have those armies in plastic too. They're what, 54 mil?
Yeah, those guys are 54 millimeter.
And those are individual because we use those for muskets.
Oh, yeah, but muskets and tomahawk too. This kind of
thing. Well, no, true, but I mean, could use something like that, like we could.
Oh, yeah.
For
yeah,
this. Could,
if, yeah, that would be fine.
Or if someone had something like that, they wouldn't have to go in and get other things. And
yeah, you would probably have to adjust some of the range scales and everything, but yeah, they would work fine.
What kind of scale was he using for models? Because in the Gates of Prague, they were 40 mil, I think?
No, they were 28.
Were they 28 that he used?
I'm pretty sure. 29, I can't remember. Pretty sure 28.
I know for his medieval day of battle, they're 40.
Those are 40.
And I thought these were bigger. I don't know if the light bulb game also used bigger for
them. Definitely 28 millimeter.
We're just reviewing photos from the Gates of Prague game to see.
So you're showing me a photo of a bunch of figures standing next to another bunch of figures with nothing to scale them against. So that's not helpful.
Well, there's a table there.
Thanks anyway, John.
You're welcome.
I'm pretty sure they were 28s. So I guess I wouldn't swear to it at this point, but.
Another photo's not going to help either. Well, either way, it's nice that if they are 28s, that it would be because terrain is really difficult when you go to those larger scales.
And expensive. Yeah,
a lot of money for it. I mean, it looks gorgeous. Don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah.
And usually that larger size, you don't always have to paint it because it comes pre-painted or it's colored plastic or whatever. So you're paying for that and you're saving on the time. So it's nice, but. How did the game go?
It went well. I mean, real life, group of Rangers, Rogers Rangers had ambushed a Indian patrol. I can't give the history as good as Chris did, but basically they ambushed this Indian patrol, what they thought was an Indian patrol, which was in fact the lead elements of a flipping huge column of Indians, and Canadian infantry. And so, their initial volley, they supposedly took out like 30 or 40 of these Indians and they got all super excited and ran down to finish off the rest of the Indians, or what they thought was the rest of the Indians. And then all of a sudden there was a boatload more Indians than what they thought. So basically it became a very spread out with small groups of guys, basically a running fight back through the woods as these Rangers tried to escape all of these Indians. And because of the deep snow and everything, basically it ended up being a massacre. The Rangers lost, I forget what Chris said, they lost like 70 to 80% of their guys.
Wow.
Rogers actually was able to escape, so the story goes, by sliding 1,000 feet down an ice floe and into the river. Truth of that story or not, I don't know, who knows, but he did escape. The Canadians thought for a while, or the French had thought for a while, that they had actually killed him because they found his clothes and equipment, but they hadn't. So anyway, in the game, it went the other way. It was more of a victory for the Rangers.
Interesting. Why do you think that was?
Because I'm a much better player than the average player.
You're so modest.
Well, the way it's set up is, so the Rangers have their backs against the wall, so to speak. It's actually a series of cliffs behind them and then a large lake behind them. So they got nowhere to go.
Hmm.
But all they have to do is defend, and the way the rules operate, all you got to do is get your guys into some decent cover, like into a patch of thick woods or something like that, and the burden's on the French and Indians to root you out of there. You just have to sit there and shoot them as they walk up to you. So I wouldn't say it was easy necessarily, because there's a lot more Indians and French than there are Rangers, but yeah, and they were having trouble. I don't think they ever had all their Indian forces on them because the Indian arrival was random.
Okay. Was it 2-on-2?
It was 2-on-2 basically.
Okay.
It was actually only one player on the French side, so Chris ran the Indian. Okay. But I don't think all the Indians were ever on the board at the same time. So that was a little bit of a problem for them. They needed a force of numbers since they had to do the attacking and they never really had it.
That's rough.
So it wasn't like it was an overwhelming victory or anything, but it was definitely a Ranger win.
What do you think of the rules?
Love the rules. Love the rules.
Yeah.
So.
I'm really appreciative. Chris had given me a review copy of the Zan, the Day of Battle medieval rules, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I actually bought the medieval set as well because I figured there would be, I mean, they're basically the core of them anyway is the same. So, and there's a role-playing aspect to both sets of rules.
Okay,
so
that's cool.
I know that'll appeal to you. But yeah, I grabbed both sets of rules.
They were only like $20 a piece, I think.
Yeah, they were on sale for the convention for $20. They're not expensive normally anyway. I think they're 23 or maybe 25. They're not expensive.
No, and you can buy them. I don't know if you can probably buy them direct from him. I think it's like dayofbattlegames.com, but I know you can get them from On Military Matters. And it's interesting for me anyway. both of them, the rules were edited, and I don't remember the layout was done as well, but by Ross Lockwood, who had been on the show many, many, many moons ago, talking about his days with MagWeb, and he did Snappy Nappy, and some of the other things that he's edited for On Military Matters. So I think On Military Matters actually published the Chris Scissor Rules, I think. They're at least kind of like the distributor sort of venue for that sort of stuff. So I'm looking forward to digging in since you bought them as well. You tend to be more of the rules guy. So anything you dive into, it's good because you really learn all the ins and outs of how to play. And then I end up learning from you how to play, which is, it makes it easier. So although I have the rule book to return to, I'd be like, oh, this is what it says, whatever. Or if you're not around, I don't have to slog through all the rules.
Yeah, it's good to be you. You don't have to buy the rules. You don't have to read the rules. You don't have to paint the figures. Basically, you don't have to do any of the work.
It is really good to be me. But what I do is I get to hype it up. I get to introduce all these cool things to everyone so that you can then say, that's a good idea. I really should spend my hard-earned cash on this. It is very good to be me. So that was your morning game, right?
Yeah.
And did you play anything in the afternoon?
The afternoon I did. I played, I forgot what scenario the title was. Assault on the Airfield, I think, but it was, the Chain of Command game run by, Ken Eckhart. And it was,
Not Bolt Action?
No, it wasn't Bolt Action. It was Chain of Command. I'm trying to make sure I pronounce the name of the island right. I won't, so I'll just say Peleliu.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But, it was a Marine landing on Peleliu. And an assault by the Marines on a Japanese-held airfield, mm-hmm. which was the reason most of the islands in the Pacific were invaded, because they had an airfield on it.
Well, if it's big enough, why the heck not?
Yeah. So there were the victory conditions that each side had were, it was kind of cool. It was, you didn't know what the other side's victory conditions actually were. I mean, if you're the Japanese player, which I was sitting on the airfield, you got to assume the Marines are here to take the airfield, but they may have a secondary condition as well, which they did, and it was a simple one, just inflicting as many Japanese casualties as possible. And the Japanese had our conditions were to hold the airfield, which was actually the secondary condition.
Hmm.
The primary condition was to counterattack the Marines and to force them off the table.
Okay.
Because the battle for Peleliu was huge, and it went on basically all day, and the scenario brings you into the action about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the Marines have been expecting Japanese counterattacks all day long, and they finally did launch a counterattack at about 5 o'clock. So that's why that was our secondary victory condition. If we wanted to try to push them off the table, we could do that. So, and we did try to do that. We failed just so horribly. Chain of Command is a great set of rules. The one thing about Chain of Command that I don't like is the offboard artillery, mortar barrages in particular, because of the way, it's hard to explain why it's a bad thing if you don't understand how the turn sequence in Chain of Command works. Turn sequence is fluid. It's not like I go, you go, turns over, I go, you. That's not how it works. You roll dice for your command actions and also to determine who's going to have the current phase. And a turn is made up of an indeterminate number of phases. So it's like, When you roll the dice to see what's going to happen, the options that could come up are either you have, like you're the phasing player, you roll the dice, and depending on how the dice roll comes out, it's like either your opponent will have the next phase or you'll have the next phase again. So it's conceivable that you can go 3, 4, 5 times in a row with your opponent not being able to do anything. Now that rarely happens.
Wow.
It can happen.
That'd be boring for someone though.
It can be, but it in practice it doesn't really work out that way. But what does happen all the time is you can go back and forth swapping phases, but never have the turn end, depending on how the dice come out. And so the way the mortar barrage works, the Marines had an offboard artillery and offboard mortar fire mission available to them. So you go through the whole battery contact thing, and you bring your mortar fire mission on board. You pick your aiming point, and once you pick the aiming point, it's an 18-inch square, you know, each side of the square is 18 inches center on that aiming point. And the mortar barrage is extremely powerful. So everything within that square gets attacked every turn, or probably is going to be attacked every turn. So you just take casualties every turn without them really having to do anything.
Wow.
You're pinned down. You can't move out of the barrage, and you can't see through the barrage. It's like if you're in it, you can't see out of it to shoot. Nobody can shoot into it. Because they can't, because apparently all the dirt and smoke and explosion flying up and everything.
Makes sense.
But it just, that 18 inch square area of the battlefield is just completely locked down, and anyone who's underneath it is just going to get chewed apart. And that's what happened to us. Once they got the mortar barrage on, we had, what do we have? I think we had a total of like 5 units on the board, squad. And at any given time, and you can march the fire for effect zone, you can march it around the map if you maintain battery contact. So if you're tired of pounding this guy, you can move it 6 inches at a time across the board to pound on some different guys, which they ended up doing.
That sounds really powerful.
It's completely overpowered. It's the one bad thing about the game. Because if you can get it on the board, you can completely lock down.
Is it hard to activate it to get it going?
No. I mean, there's dice rolls involved, but no, it's not hard to get it going. And so to end a turn, you accumulate, as you roll on your command dice to see how many orders and whatnot you have to give to your troops, you accumulate what are called chain of command points. Once you get 6 of these chain of command points, then you earn what's called a chain of command die. And you can use that die to do a variety of things, one of which is end the turn. So it's like once you've earned that die, then if you want the turn to end, like if you're the unfortunate sap who's underneath the border barrage, the only way you're going to end that is if you use your chain of command die to end the turn. So we finally earned enough points to have a chain of command die. But the other side by that point had also earned enough points that they had a chain of command dice.
Can they negate you wanting to
absolutely. End? You end the turn and then they play their chain of command die, say, okay, the turn is over, but the mortar barrage continues then.
Oh.
It is ridiculous. Don't get
that
me
is
wrong.
Awful.
It's ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. Chain of command is a great set of rules. I really enjoy it, but the off-board artillery barrage really needs some tweaking.
That sounds like something that should be house ruled.
Yeah, and if I were to run out, I probably would. Like, I wouldn't allow the opposing team maybe to have the option to say, oh no, this turn's not actually over, the mortar barrage just continues.
Wow.
I wouldn't give them that ability. Something needs to be done about it. It's ridiculously overpowered.
It really sounds like, I'm surprised they even made it through the process to get put in the book that way.
A little bit. And I don't know, maybe the 2 Fat Lardies guys, maybe everybody in the world is doing it wrong. That's not the way they intended for it to work. But my reading of the rules and every game I've played in, that's just the way it works. So, yeah, don't like it. It needs to be changed. I wouldn't, chain of command is it for, aside from that, though, chain of command really is a good set of rules. I like I do sort of like the randomness of the turns and phases and not knowing exactly what's going to happen next. That kind of appeals to me. And, you have to rely, if you want to do a lot of stuff, you have to really rely on your leaders or, in 2 Fat Lardies parlance, they call them big men, but basically your leaders. because they can actually get your troops to do a lot more. Like you can either activate a squad or you can activate the squad's leader, but if the squad's leader activates, he can get the squad to do a whole lot more than if they just activate on their own. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So I like that aspect of it too. Overall, chain of command is a great set of rules. It's just that the off-board artillery stuff seriously needs to be tweaked. It's just wrong.
It sounds it, but that's, I'm really surprised that it even made it out of playtesting like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if a lot of people house rule the silliness away or if they just.
Maybe they just embrace it and figure that's kind of how it goes when you play one of their games.
Maybe so. Maybe I'm the guy who's completely wrong about it. And maybe, in real life, which supposedly we always strive to emulate in these games, maybe mortar barrage is that overpowering, but I don't care. I don't want it to be that overpowering in the game. And it is. So.
Well, I gotta say, if someone was doing that in a location where I was, I would be dead, but I would just, you hide under your helmet and you hope for the best.
Well, and that's exactly what it portrays. But like, when you're under the bride, you can't do a thing.
But like that shouldn't last a whole game's worth, you should be able to move the stuff, but it sounds like it's way too easy to do all of this. And then with the amount of damage it does and the impact it has on the game, it just overbalances in the favor of the people who are able to do the mortar barrage against the other one.
And God forbid that both sides have mortar barrages and they both manage to get them on the table. Then it's just rolling dice for the mortar barrage is all it degenerates into. It's terrible. I think the best way to approach it would be to not allow the side that has the barrage going on, just not allow them to use their chain of command dice to continue it if the turn ends. I think that would be the best way to resolve it.
Or maybe you could even have it where it's like every other turn you can use it or something.
Maybe something, but yeah, you definitely need to be able to.
Not like an always thing.
Yeah. So, don't let that, it sounds like I'm doing a lot of complaining about chain of command and the fact.
Well, you are, but no.
Well, I'm.
But it sounds justified.
Page of the rules is all I'm complaining about.
Sometimes that's all it takes though. Cause if that really unbalances the game, that one thing might not take a whole lot of space up in the rules, but it can have a huge impact on the game itself and just alter things out. And maybe the artillery barrage for the mortars doesn't come into play in every game. I don't know, but like, it sounds like the ones that it does, it needs to be worked on. It helps rolls or something.
Yeah, it's powerful enough that if you, depending on what you're playing, if you have the ability to take an offboard, you know, forward artillery observer, an offboard fire mission like that, you're kind of foolish if you don't take it.
Mm. Well, it's like when people play,
there are other ways to shut it down. I mean, the fire has to be directed by an artillery observer. So if you can take that guy out, then you can kind of shut it down. I mean,
well, that's reasonable.
Commanders can still spot for it, but it ends up being a lot harder to get it on. There's other things that you can do. But in order to prevent that, instead of having your artillery observer off on his own somewhere.
You put him in a unit?
Yeah, you just attach him to a unit. And then you can shoot that unit to pieces, and maybe you'll hit the observer, or maybe not. It's a random die roll whether or not you get him. So.
Okay.
Unless you have a sniper. A sniper can target particular units, but
that's more reasonable.
It is more reasonable, so it's not like ending the turn is the only way to necessarily shut it down, but it's still,
yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Just one guy's opinion.
So while you were gaming in the morning and early afternoon on Saturday, we had grand plans to go out and see Portland and maybe do Old Port and all sorts of stuff. And wouldn't you know, the baby decided she didn't want a nap until right before we were going to go. Because that's how that, or she needs, like, a big diaper change. It's one of the two, inevitably. It always happens. And, you know, we just roll with it is what it is. So, God bless my wife. She is just amazing. She had our daughter, and she's just trying to get her to go to sleep. And the baby fell asleep on her. It pinned her down in the chair. And my wife, I thought she was going to take a nap. Turned out she wasn't even able to nap. She kind of slouched there for like an hour and 15 minutes while the baby's sleeping on her. And so as my daughter's starting to nod off, I mouthed to my wife, I'm going downstairs. Because I knew I'm like the really crazy fun one. Not that my wife isn't, but like I do all the really silly, stupid stuff. And so my daughter gets really excited and wants to, you know, play and do all that kind of stuff. So I figured I had to remove myself from that and make it extra quiet so I'm not going to be the distraction. And I was like, well, I guess I could have probably played in something. And when I came down, I thought, hey, you know, I'll give it a try to maybe see if I can win anything in the raffles, because I never win anything. Except for the first year I came, I won in Architects of War or something or other. And I don't remember what it was. It's probably...
It was a farm.
Did I win that or did I buy that?
Won that.
You know, I think you're right, actually, which is actually a pretty huge win, because I can't imagine I put a lot of raffle tickets in.
Yeah.
And of course, now you can't even get them anymore. I was actually supposed to bring that, now that you say it, this year, because Dean or some of the guys here were going to help me put it together, because the instructions, which were on the Architects of War website, of course, are gone because they're done. And
yeah, I've actually got the meeting house that I actually want it in a raffle here, too.
In basically
never
the same.
Put it together. Yeah.
And the instructions are gone, and I don't even think it's possible to get in touch with the Architects of War people anymore to get that stuff. And well, anyway, of course, I forgot to bring that. So I won. I was really excited. I was like, I'm going to get some raffle tickets. And I found out there's like 10 raffle tickets for $5. I reached into my wallet and I had $10. So I said, okay, I'll take, you know, $10 worth. And so I put in, usually I look and I'm like, I'll put a few here, a few there. And I was like, you know what? I want to actually maybe really win something this time instead of just, not that I regret giving the Minister of the War Gamers Association any money, because they've been very generous in support of the show. And they're a good group of people anyway. They do a lot of good with the money that they get. So I'm not against it, but it'd be nice to win something for a change.
Right.
You know, so I put my $10 into trying to win a one-year subscription to one of the magazines published by Karen Sire Publications. They are, if you guys aren't familiar with them, and you should, because I've talked about them on the show before, and I've had Jesper Ortiz, who's the managing editor of publications for them, on the show. But they do really good stuff. So they get War Game Soldiers and Strategy, which is a like tabletop battle sort of magazine. They do Ancient Warfare magazine, which talks about, as you would guess, warfare in the ancient world, medieval warfare, and then we talked on here not too long ago, the Kickstarter for Ancient History magazine, which doesn't focus on warfare and the fighting so much, but more the culture and the political kind of stuff, which is interesting, I think, because that plays into it. That's the cause usually for the war.
Yeah.
Or people are just greedy and want your resources. Either way. So I was like, I really want a one-year sub, because It's not something I normally would buy for myself just because I can find it online a lot of the stuff, but it's nice to have. And I happened to look up online. I was like, oh, it's, I don't know, it's $18 or $20 American for it. So I forgot, I'm in for $10 and we'll see if I get it. And I looked at the War Games Illustrated one. I thought of doing that too. And I was like, nah, I don't want to put another $10 in. Just we'll see what happens. And lo and behold, I won. So I get a 1 year digital, is it digital? 1 year digital sub to, I'll probably pick WSNS is what I'm thinking I'll do. I like the others. I have copies of others, the other titles, but WSNS is the one that really kind of calls to me. So
yeah, WSNS is more general, though. I mean, you can find ancient stuff in there sometimes, whereas you're never going to find World War II or Civil War and ancient warfare. So
no,
unless you're seriously into ancient warfare or medieval warfare.
I mean, whereas we do have that interest in Hail Caesar more recently, it would maybe make sense to do one of the ancient ones because I know they have. Like they have Roman, they do a special Roman issue, and that's coming soon, I think. But I can always just buy that one off if I really want, if it looks interesting. So I'll get WSNS, and I got to figure out how I activate that and whatever. By the time people listen to this, I hope I will have that activated and everything. And I'm sure it's easy to get that taken care of. And I can just talk to whoever. But I was excited, and I know you put in for something. It was a board game, right?
Yeah.
How did that go?
That went poorly.
You have chosen poorly.
No, I put $10 worth of tickets.
Did you? So it was $10. Okay.
Yeah. It was the only particular thing that was up for auction that had a burning desire to own. So I threw a bunch of tickets in for that, and unfortunately, it didn't pan out. So, but like I said, it was only. $10 worth of tickets, which is actually about 20 tickets. So,
and again, goes to great cause. They do a lot of good stuff here. MHWA, yeah. Of course, it helps with the convention. They do game days, and they help out with kids in the area and do all sorts of really cool stuff. So, the money's worth it. And I talked with Dean, who's one of the convention organizers, and I was like, oh, I won, and I was all excited. I said, you saved me a bunch of money because I put $10 in and. And I got this, and it's almost like double. So you can actually get a good deal on stuff.
Yeah.
It depends on what really appeals to you. They had other rule sets, Fletcher Pratt, and they had some models.
Yeah, Fletcher Pratt's good, but I had that already, so I didn't. I suppose I should say the game I was going for. It's Liberty or Death. It's designed by Harold Buchanan.
Mm-hmm.
I think they raffled off 2 copies of it.
They did. They had one Friday night, too.
But I only put in for Saturday afternoon when I actually didn't really realize that it was out on Friday night, or I put in for that too, probably. But in any case, that was the one that I wanted particularly badly, but not to be.
They had some John Jenkins design stuff, which I know people love.
Yeah.
Not my, I think they look nice. It's just not, I know I'm not going to do anything with it. It's going to sit on my shelf.
Yeah.
And for me, WSNS, I'll actually do, I can get it on an iPad or whatever, and I'll read it and I'll flip through and make little notations, things that I want to talk about or. Jasper's going to be coming on the show sometime soon. I should look in the calendar. But we're going to be talking about the Great Wargaming Survey, and so he'll talk about all sorts of stuff. So it just is kind of cool. Right before the raffle, it was someone comes up to me and says, Jonathan? And I'm like, yes. And I'm thinking, you look vaguely familiar, but I can't tell why. And so he introduces himself. His name's Robert. And he was telling me that he actually had emailed me a few years ago, I guess, a year or two ago. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, wait, and that seemed to ring a bell, and I vaguely remember the email. So I was like, oh yeah, I think I remember. And he's like, well, it was a while ago, so you probably don't, and it's a common name. I was like, but you don't understand. It's not like I get a whole lot of emails from people who I meet at conventions. And so I went back to the room. I actually have the email up in front of me, but it's funny because, at the time he emailed me in 2014, he said he listened to the show via Stitcher, which a lot of people like because you can get it on all the devices. You don't have to subscribe. You don't have to do like the iTunes model. And at the time, Google didn't have anything in the Google Play Store to listen to podcasts, really. So you had to go through Stitcher. Now Google Play does have a podcast set up through the Google Play Music stuff. But he's saying that he was listening to the show, and he kind of wanted to get into more historicals and sorts of stuff. And he hoped to someday be able to get to Huzzah, of all things. And so we had some emails going back and forth, just kind of talk about things and how to get historical models here in the U.S. because a lot of the manufacturers aren't here in the U.S.
No, they're not.
And like you try to get stuff from overseas, and it's so expensive. I mean, you and I wanted to get Peter Pig at one point, and we had to deal with, was it Brookhurst Hobbies?
Brookhurst Hobbies, I think that's the only place, well, the only one I know of that you can order online from in the States.
And we'll leave them for another show, but it wasn't the easiest of things to deal with is really the way to put it.
Their web order set up, mail order set up, it's not all that could be.
I'm all for supporting the local game store if they're good, if they're worth supporting. But again, not all of them have historicals, and not all of them are going to go overseas. The closest is you might be able to get a Warlord or a Perry. Around here in New England, we're actually lucky. We have quite a few really good friendly local game stores and quite a few that are good for historicals. The Hobby Bunker in Malden in Massachusetts is amazing. Gordon's, excuse me, Adler Board Game Cafe. He gets all sorts of stuff. I know the name's Board Game Cafe, but it's a game store. You can go, you can play there, and he carries all sorts of stuff. You can get Bitrix, you can get the Perrys, Warlord, of course. So he gets all that stuff over from the UK, and it's easy. But if it's not easy to go to one of these, your only option is either order online, and either order online from the UK predominantly, or Russia to some degree if you want Zvezda, for example, or Australia for any of the Battlefront stuff. And it's hard.
Battlefront stuff, everybody carries that.
They do, but if you're not able to get to the store, I mean, if it's far. Like Robert, I think, was saying that he had been to Gordon's and he had been to the Hobby Bunker, but where he was maybe slash still is at, it was a really long drive. It was like 3-hour ride to go, and I balk at us going 40 minutes to the bunker.
55 minutes from our place, where we're at, up to the Hobby Bunker. So, we're going to do that far.
But the good thing with the bunker is you can order online and they ship to you.
Right.
And you spend $100 if you get their email newsletters. They have a promo code in there and you get free shipping on it. Otherwise, shipping's really cheap, I think. So we just kind of talked about that. So it was neat to see him here, and he had put in for actually Evolving. He put in for the digital subscription that I ended up winning, and for War Games Illustrated. I think he said he had like 4 tickets. So he kind of divided them up, put them in, and unfortunately he didn't get anything. Hopefully, Robert, if you're listening, I hope you ended up getting something eventually. And I'm sorry that I won the digital sub that you were hoping to get as well. But I assure you, I never win anything except for that Architect
War.
And this.
The same raffle,
but we won't talk about that, right? We'll just leave that out. And then, and you know, I'm awful with names is what it is. Unless I write stuff down, it's terrible. But I was walking around and someone else says, Jonathan? And I'm like, what? And again, this never happens. And maybe it's because I was wearing the shirt or whatever. He's like, have you seen, I got you on the wall. And I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who does the Fenway game. If you guys, anywhere in New England, you go to a game day or convention, he runs this amazing game where it takes place in Fenway Park and you play baseball. And I'm told it's the closest thing to actually playing baseball that you can do. But it's cool because he's put up signs and logos all over his Fenway area gaming conventions and game days and things that he really likes. And he had put up a while ago, I saw a photo, but I haven't seen him in person. He made a copy of the logo of the show, and we're on the Green Monster.
Yeah.
And I mean, I used to play baseball as a kid, and I like watching a good game. I prefer watching it in person. On TV, I kind of nod off. But I was just like, wow, it's really cool. And like right next to me is the Boston Strong logo, and there's Huzzah on there somewhere, and Havoc is there, and Total Con, all these different places. So it was really cool to chat with him a little bit and to see it in person. I took some photos and I kind of like geeked out about it because, I mean, it's neat.
Yeah.
And I'm humbled and honored that someone's like, oh, he listens to the show and he's like, oh, I want to put you on. And he's friends with Mike Payne, who said he should put stuff on. So it's kind of neat how everyone's just kind of interconnected.
Yeah.
Did you happen to do any shopping at any of the vendors at all?
I did. Of course I did.
How'd you make out?
I spent more than I should have. Sorry.
Dare I ask?
It's all non-traceable. By my wife, so it doesn't matter how much it was that first thing. I'd rather not throw an exact figure out there, but let's say that I picked up, there's a set of rules that I'm really anxious to give a try. We haven't yet, but we need to, called British Grenadier, that are strictly, American Revolutionary War. So I picked up a couple of scenario books from the Hobby Bunker for that. I grabbed, what else did I grab? Oh, I bought Lucky Bob's and Day of Battle, both Chris Parker dual sets. I found at one of the vendors, and I'll try to come up with the name of the vendor, but I'm not going to be able to. Crossroad Games, I think. The old Avalon Hill Battle of the Bulge. It was shrink-wrapped, and I asked the guy, he said it wasn't the original shrink-wrapped. They had shrink-wrapped it at the store, and it was like, so is it unpunched? And unfortunately, he's not the guy who took the game into inventory and shrink wrap, so he didn't know. It felt like it was unpunched. I got it back to the room last night and opened it up, and unfortunately it was not unpunched, but all the parts appear to be there, so I was pretty happy to score that, actually. The old Avalon Hill games are great fun to play, and it's hard to find them in decent shape sometimes. So, there's something else I got. Oh, another set of, company level World War II rules, as if I need one.
You can never have too many of those, right?
Exactly. I'll pen it in here deluxe, so I'm actually going to give that a try. All of my 15mm World War II stuff is unfortunately based for Flames of War, of which we'll not speak further. But fortunately, this rule set and the Two Fat Lardies rule set that I actually like a lot, I Ink and Shot Mom, are both pretty flexible in what you use for bases. So if you got your stuff based for Flames of War, you don't need to change anything to use either of those rule sets. So looking forward to giving that a try.
I actually had a really good deal. I bought some books at Brigadier's bookshelf. And I always love checking out and see what they have. Dean Emerson is the proprietor of it. So I managed to get Handbook for Model Soldier Collectors by Don Featherstone. I got The Price of Admiralty About Naval Warfare by John Keegan. I also picked up The Minutemen by John Galvin. And Dean said this is one of his favorite books for Rev War, that it gives, it's very accessible, easy to get into, but it dispels a lot of the myths that people, like all the stuff we learned in school basically, that's wrong. And it corrects it, and it does it in really fluid and easy to get manner. It's one of his favorite books on the topic. By Peter Kemp, The Escape of the Scharnhorst in Nisenau. I love the Scharnhorst from playing Axis and Allies War. It's a favorite of mine. I mentioned about getting Light Bobs and Day of Battle. And there was another book I thought I got. Let me just check my little notes here. Oh, that's right. I got the Roman Imperial Army. I think it was the second edition by Graham Webster. Dean also had the third edition, and is a little bit bigger and everything. I don't know what sort of differences in editing they had, but the second one I figured would fit better in my suitcase and so forth. So I'm looking forward for that, just because someday we're going to be doing Hail Caesar, eventually, maybe.
Oh, we've been saying that.
Well, let's not talk about that. And then Saturday night, you had a beg off because you were a tad under the weather, right?
Yeah, I wasn't feeling all that great. I had signed up to play Advanced Squad Leader in the evening, but I was actually going to not do that and play Mike Payne's game, which I really wanted to do. But I unfortunately wasn't up to it, so I had to bow out of that as well.
I played in that, and that was a great game. It was the Battle of Hanghai. And Mike's games normally are a little bit more pulp and a little less historical, but this was actually the other way around. It was like, say, 70% historical, 30% pulp. So it still had his traditional feel of open world. You can attempt to do just about anything you want. A little bit of that role play aspect with it too. But it was definitely focused more on the historical. So what it was is, it was based on when the Japanese invaded Shanghai, and all the different concessions there, the British concession, the American concession, and so forth. So there was 8 of us, I think, playing something like that. And we each had a different thing. There were warlords, there were French, there were British Americans. I played as the Hanghai Municipal Police. I had a little barge in the middle of the bay and a little patrol boat. And it was fun. The goal was you wanted to hang on to your concession because each one that you controlled was worth 5 points. And then you earned 1 point for killing each soldier or troop of your opponent. So they're all individually based and you just run around and kill people. Whoever killed the most won. And believe it or not, I came in second. The Japanese had come in and they were like right close to me. And I'm thinking, well, don't want to take them on or what? And the game started where the Japanese is at war against everyone except the British, the French, the Americans, and the police are neutral and can decide who they want to ally with. So I was like, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to take a shot at the Japanese because my patrol boat, I happened to get a cannon. So I had a cannon on the front. 3 dice, I whiff. Nobody hits anything. I needed 2 guys to man that. The rest of my guys are shooting nothing. They're right out in the open in the boat. And yet somehow we all had cover for this. You get a cover save. It might seem really easy. You roll a d10, 0 through 4. You accomplish basically whatever you want to do. And the same with it. Save, it's attack, whatever. Nothing. So I'm rolling like crap and I'm just not doing well. But it was really interesting because the kid playing as the British happened to be right next to the Americans and turned on them and attacked them. And he was pounding them all game long. And he got really good rolls. So it was a bloodbath everywhere. And then the French decided they were going to attack me too. And that was interesting. And then as the night progressed, more and more people had skedaddle. So we ended the game early. And the Japanese had like 32 points at the end of it, which makes sense, because they were attacking everyone.
Right.
They get attacked by everyone. And I had like 24, 25, something like that. Excuse me. It was a really good game, a lot of fun, as his games are. And I was happy to be able to crawl into bed because I was exhausted. But I'm glad I played in it, and I think Mike's going to put in his rotation.
Yeah, he said he's going to be running more often, so I didn't have to worry about missing it this time.
Mm. He'll have it. I think he's going to be up at Carnage later this year. So he'll have it there, and I'm sure at the Hobby Bunker game day, which is in August, I'm going, I believe you are too.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll have it at Totalcon and Havoc in 2017 and everything. So that should be cool. And let's see. Anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
Well.
Well, I mean, we're kind of running out of time, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then no.
So let's move on to one of my favorite segments of the show is Mailbag, because I love hearing from people. Believe it or not, I'm not what you would call a people person normally, but I love communicating with the people who listen to the show and see what's going on, and just other wargamers. I get a lot of fun from it. So the first night here, I posted a photo of my daughter at Cracker Barrel. We went there for dinner, and I captioned it like something like, my daughter says everyone should eat a Cracker Barrel, and it's really good or whatever. And it's a photo of her shoving grilled cheese, I think it was, into her face. No, mac and cheese right in her face, and she's like, all right, mac and cheese everywhere. So Sean B., commented and said, well, duh, she's right. And Donald H. also said, who am I to disagree? Cracker Barrel's right next door. It's easy to get to. It's a great place to go eat. And just all sorts of stuff. Nice. The first night here was kind of hard because on Fridays I don't eat meat. And they had a really good fish dinner that I had. It was really good. I don't really think of Cracker Barrel fish. I mean, unless you want catfish, which I'm not going to touch. But so it worked out really well. And then I want to remind everyone, we've had some activity on the Facebook page regarding the Extra Life charity auction, which will be coming in November. Dave Livesey, once again, painted a model to auction off. It's a model of Napoleon as first consul, 1800. It's 28 millimeters by Trent Miniatures, sculpted by Mark Copplestone. And Dave's painted it. It's gorgeous. There's some sneak peek photos on the Facebook page. And then Stuart Foley of paintedwargamefigures.co.uk has painted up a model of Frank Gallagher from the TV show Shameless, which I've never seen, but I know it's big in the UK, and there's an American version too. But this is 28 mil by Hassle Free Miniatures, sculpted by Kev White, and it was painted with GW and Vallejo paints. Again, I got some sneak peeks on the Facebook page. And leading up to today, I had said there was going to be a big announcement I was going to be making, and it's actually, it might be a surprise to people, and some people might think that's a big announcement, and other people might be like, whoa, that's a big announcement. It depends on what you consider big and everything. So I'm happy to announce that Wargaming Recon is now the newest member of the TSR Podcast Network. We are their flagship show for historical and tabletop wargaming. You can find us at wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN. Now, this is the TSR that's affiliated with Tim Kask and Frank Mentzer. They worked with Gary Gygax. They are familiar with Chainmail, one of the granddaddies of historical wargaming rules. TSR is helmed by Jason Elliott. Peter Blitz Bryant is a producer for the network. We left Troll in the Corner. So this last show that will be branded as a Troll in the Corner member, not because of any real reason, but this opportunity came along and the Troll in the Corner podcast network kind of going in a different direction. And we all just said, okay, this is perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with it. I'm still keeping my show Geeks Explicitly there. Should I ever have another episode come out? So that will be there. But this is a good thing. Everyone's happy about it. This also means that we'll have access to more resources insofar as potential guests and contacts, that sort of stuff.
Will you have access to funds to start paying your guests?
Probably not. No. I mean, people, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but we do have that Patreon campaign that people can support and can have that sort of stuff going on. I want to make sure that I do mention, though, with the TSR Podcast Network, right now there are 5 active shows. They are Game School. Let me try that again as if I know what I'm doing. They are Game School, Cube of Death, Path of Legends, Dead Game Society, and of course Wargaming Recon. And then I'm also allowed to say that the Mythwits will be joining as a 6th show in July. That's another great show. They do live on Monday nights. Science and comedy, it's not safe for work. Wargaming Recon tends to be. All the shows, like I said, will be on the TSR website. And I also want to mention that TSR has this blog that's really popular. It's about gaming. It's called Multiverse. Multiverse.world. We'll have a link. Don't worry. I'll be able to blog there about wargaming and that kind of stuff. A lot of activity there. A lot of people checking it just throughout the world. It's become very popular. And then they have something called Pantheon Press. It's a digest-sized set of adventures, kind of like the old days, the old-school role-playing. Each book is 5.5 by 8.5 inches, has a fold-up map, and they're going to be doing a role-playing game known as the Acred Herald. Their real name will be released soon, and there's going to be other stuff coming up. But there's all sorts of stuff, so we're going to be interconnecting, and we're working on things for TotalCon to kind of do a big TSR sort of event, and that I'll be part of, and just connected with all sorts of really cool people in the industry. I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to help Wargaming Recon to grow, reach even more people, and have more stuff to happen here while staying true to what we're doing. So it's really neat, and just all sorts of cool stuff happening. And then I also want to let people know we got something cool going on. Let me pick up a different one. I had some custom Wargaming Recon dice made. The logo is a little different from what we've been using because it's hard. These are wooden dice, and they had to get laser etched into it. Christopher Rhett did them. I think they're really cool. There's two different designs right now that will be exclusive, I believe, for this year, and I might change it up every year. People can get them through the Patreon campaign. I don't have the exact price worked out yet, but I believe they're going to be somewhere between $18 to $20. You get a set of six, and includes shipping. I'll send them to you and everything. And we have an iTunes review to share. It's a 5-star review titled, "It Has Begun," from Uncle Tanner. He says, quote, "Engaging, entertaining, and knowledgeable. This host brings a passion to the board in this podcast. If you're a gamer, especially if you live in the New England area, this podcast is for you. If you're outside of that, you should still subscribe. You'll be missing out if you don't." So thank you very much, Uncle Tanner. And if you want to give us an iTunes review, go to wargamingrecon.com/iTunes and please rate us and review us. And I read all the reviews we get, and you can make it into the show with that, which is really cool. And I'd like to take this time to thank the very kind and supportive people from the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. First of all, for putting it on, huzzah. It's so much fun up here in Maine to come and look forward to coming back next year. And also just because they are sponsors of the show and they make it possible to do the show. It's not cheap to do this, believe it or not. You think just talking into your microphone would be pretty affordable, and it's not.
It doesn't look like it costs a whole lot.
You wouldn't think. I mean, right here, we're sitting at a really small table. I got my MacBook Pro. I got a Logitech HD webcam and some other stuff, mic stand and a mic or whatever. But this is like, if you don't count the computer, because the computer's a lot of money, but if you don't count that, this is probably like $350, $400 worth of stuff. But then it's cost. I mean, coming here, staying at the hotel and doing all that,
yeah.
You can spend money for all this kind of stuff. And then I have to thank the very kind backers on Patreon, Dave and the Wargames at Battleshades Facebook group, Patrick and Chris Parker. I want to thank all of you for your kind support. You helped to keep the show going. It means a lot. And don't forget, there are cool things you can get if you're a backer. You have cool new custom dice that we have. I'll have prices on those. We have Wargaming Recon measuring tape and just all sorts of other stuff. Go to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon and you can become a backer for as little as $1 per month. And that gets you in. You get episodes before everyone else and behind the scenes content as well. The next episode of the show will come out on June 6th, 2016. And I can tell you, coming up, we have some guests that are going to be really cool. So we have, not on that episode, but we have for the episode coming out on June 20th, Alyssa Faden will be on. She's going to be talking about Enfilade, which is out in Oregon, I believe, the Historical Wargaming Convention. And she's also going to talk about wargaming in ancient Rome. She's very, very knowledgeable about ancient Rome and wargaming in that time period. It should be just really fantastic to hear what she has to say. And then the episode after that, coming out on July 4th, Joseph Piddington is going to be coming back on because there's going to be a second Kickstarter for Miniature Wargaming the movie. So we're going to be talking about that. And then the episode after that, Jasper Ortiz comes on to talk about the Great Wargaming Survey. And then more cool stuff later on in the year. Well, I think that's all we got. Thank you very much, Adrian, for coming on the show this time and talking about the games that you played.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And thanks to the Maine Historical Wargamers. Great bunch of guys, and huzzah, it's just a great convention.
It is fantastic, and I look forward to coming back next year, and I hope you'll be able to make it as well.
I hope so.
If any of you listening have not been to huzzah, please take the time and consider coming. It's worth it. Easy, very easy drive if you're anywhere within New England. And even if you're outside, it's worth making the trip, really, to come up here.
It really is. Aside from the convention, Portland is a nice touristy town. I mean, it's a decent family trip. But it's totally worth your time if you're a wargamer.
Plenty of places to sightsee, lots of lighthouses, great food, just all sorts of stuff. And more and more of us, I think, are coming and bringing our families. So it's kind of cool that people are able to go off and do all sorts of cool stuff. Like I said, the next episode comes out June 6th, 2016. Well, you know the drill. No matter how busy you are, no matter how many sixes you think you're going to roll on some custom dice, you know you have to. You got to. You need to. Keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Are you a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer? Then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.